Back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Travelers Roundtable correspondent Rob Bundy joins us once again. Hi, Rob.
Hey, good to be back.
Rob is taking us to, Detroit, a city that has spent a lot of time in the spotlight over the past summer, and not necessarily for such great reasons. I don't know that Detroit is first and foremost on most people's vacation radar.
Yeah, well, certainly not if you believe most mainstream media reports, no.
There was the bankruptcy filing in July.
Yeah, and it set off an international flurry of doomsaying for the 11th time. Yeah, so that's that. Detroit is just finished. Again, it's over.
Again.
Well, yeah, I mean, excuse my being a little exasperated, but it's far from the first time the pundits have given Detroit its last rites. The eulogies for Detroit have come steadily for years. Every news cycle, there's a new reason why death is imminent. Stories of the city's epic rise and fall. It's practically a literary subcategory. Documentary films, coffee table books filled with intriguing ruins that are beautiful and heartbreaking, and the message that everything's always just getting worse.
Well, so then if that is the dominant narrative about Detroit, what is the subtext?
There's all kinds of great things happening in Detroit, but much of the media finds the good bits, shall we say, inconvenient. It's like the media has this lovely eulogy written, and Detroit just keeps ruining everything by refusing to stay dead.
This is like the Monty Python sketch where they're telling them to bring out your dead and the one guy insisting that I'm not dead.
Yeah, shut up. You'll be stone dead in a moment. the media just won't let go of its fond narrative that all is lost for Detroit, and then people, whether they've been to Detroit or not, just parrot that narrative. So the good things, and there's a lot of them, tend to get ignored or treated as outliers and dismissed.
Just to play devil's advocate here, Detroit is not the same place that it was in its heyday.
Oh, no, fair enough. Look, you don't have to look very far to find ruined buildings, sure. But there's also so much that is new and wonderful. There's too much greatness that still remains there and a great deal to interest the visitor. But the national media just will not. Here's just one example. In July of this year, shortly after the bankruptcy was declared, Wired magazine published this big, beautiful photo study by a genuinely gifted Canadian photographer. 10 photographs, and it was all the majestic ruins of Detroit. They were artfully done. 10 of the images in the slideshow were of the 1926 book Cadillac Hotel. And the photos were so sad of the poor, poor, abandoned book Cadillac Hotel. But, you know, 5 of the 10 pictures in that study were buildings that had already been restored back to their original glory, including the book Cadillac Hotel, which was restored more than 5 years ago to the tune of $200 million. And I was there. I swam in the pool. I ate at the 3 new restaurants. It's fantastic. And it's a good symbol of Detroit's indomitable spirit. It bounced back from the crash of 1929, and it's bounced back again in a big way. But according to Wired magazine, it's all still ruins. And I'm not the only one who likes Detroit, by the way. On the last night of our stay, I got out of the elevator at the book Cadillac as Anthony Bourdain was getting on.
And so did you compare notes with Anthony Bourdain?
Oh, I was a total fan. Not ashamed to say I gushed. I took his picture with my wife. He was really nice. I was so surprised when I saw him. I blurted out a bad word, and he leaned down and told my 5-year-old son, every time he swears, he has to give you a dollar. He was a very nice man.
But to make a long story short, you are not the only travel writer that is caught on to the pleasures of Detroit.
More people are starting to question the doom and gloom storyline. I really look forward to hearing Anthony Bourdain's segment on it.
All right. So as a visitor to the city, aside from the book Cadillac Hotel, what were your impressions and how were they different than what we're hearing?
We loved Detroit. I'll admit it. Those stories of doom are powerful. I'd only been once on business many years ago, saw nothing of the city, was uncertain. But the people who actually live in Detroit, as well as many of the frequent visitors, say it's a great city still. And especially over the past couple of years, it's getting better all the time. You walk through the downtown area, you'll see dozens of building permits, sold signs, new construction. Local developers are buying up dozens of properties right in the downtown area. Maybe they don't want anybody to know because they want them all for themselves. One example, last year, 3 vintage 20-story high-rises in the downtown area were completely renovated into high-end condominiums, and all 3 of them sold out within weeks. They didn't have enough. People wanted more. Energy is pouring back into Detroit, and the people are moving back too because they want to be part of that emerging scene.
I'm not sure, though, for the average visitor, condominiums are an amazing draw. What are the draws for the traveler coming
to Detroit? Okay, fair enough. You want to enjoy some of the world's finest art, beautiful parks, magnificent architecture, stunning museums with singular collections, evocative and interesting restaurants, great craft bars, artisanal craft and indefatigable creativity, and people that are friendly and welcoming. You really need to visit Detroit. because you're going to have a wonderful time. Detroit has problems, sure. There are 40 square miles of vacant space in the city of Detroit. That's a fact. But the people who choose to live there, and there are more of them every day, are writing upon those blank pages, and they're creating new chapters. Detroit has a new Riverwalk that's almost completed. Not quite, but it's open and functional. It's a big hit with families. You'll see wonderful architecture. There's urban gardens that were empty lots not too long ago. There's great new places to eat in Greektown. Newly restored buildings in the theater district. You've got night spots like Cliff Bell's Jazz Club, a short walk from the Books Hotel's door. Comerica Park, home of the Detroit Tigers, is only a half dozen blocks away.
You can catch up on Prince Fielder's home run hitting while eating a delicious Coney dog.
Ah, the Coney dog. Yeah. And some of the reinvention in the city has just been plain fun. The Detroit Institute of Art is one of the top 10 art museums in the country and worth the drive from Milwaukee all by itself. I'm serious. They have a glorious collection that includes Renoir, Degas, Van Gogh, an important American collection, and a trove of Dutch masterpieces. And maybe what they're most famous for, they have this astonishing Diego Rivera mural that wraps around all four walls of this central atrium. It's just breathtakingly beautiful. The museum also has a brand-new, remodeled, three-story, glass-ceiling Kresge court, more impressive than ever. They have a sculpture garden. If it's Friday in the summertime, head into the courtyard and hear live music. And after you hit the Detroit Art Institute, you definitely need to pay a visit to Rodin, just opened this year. Great restaurant. You've got to go to Green Dot Stables in Corktown. That's a new restaurant where they have gourmet sliders, each with a recommended Michigan craft beer pairing. What did I have? We had the fried chicken slider with panko, sage, maple syrup, paired with an Atwater Brewery's Ghetto Blaster, the venison hot dog or the urban truffle fries. They have a mystery meat slider that changes depending on what unusual creature they can get their hands on. I missed the chance to eat a camel slider by days. I'm heartbroken. all the sandwiches are like $2 or $3 a pop. We loved it. Look, many of these are new places, and they are well worth seeking out. Oh, another thing. One of my favorite parts of the trip was a tour with the Art House Lectures and Tours hosted by Professor Michael Farrell, and that was a blast. Michael is like the favorite professor you had in college, warm, brilliant, funny, and an encyclopedic knowledge of his subject. And he and Art House manager Mark Herrick can put together a tour custom tailored to your interests.
And so what do you see on this tour?
Wow. Well, they showed me the incredible Fisher Building, one of the finest extant examples of Art Deco in the country. I also saw Wirt Rowland's Guardian Building, an exuberant downtown combination of Art Moderne and Native American influences.
This seems like an unlikely combination.
No, trust me, it works. It's actually my favorite building in Detroit and out of a crowded field. Farrell's a great raconteur, very entertaining and really informative. I learned the stories behind the buildings, why they mattered, beyond what I could see with my own eyes. Oh, you got to check out their own house, their art house. It's a stunner, magnificent house. And while I was there and marveling at the craftsmanship, Michael pointed out that there were holes drilled into the doors for deadbolts that were installed when the place was down at the Heels boarding house in the 70s.
They're not patching them?
You see, yeah, that's what I asked Michael. And when I did, he turned to me with this look of theatrical surprise and said, "Why? The holes are part of the history."
That's a pretty good way to look at it. Maybe a metaphor for Detroit.
Yeah. And I learned to see all of Detroit through that lens during the rest of my stay. The flaws, the old wounds, the gaps, they're part of the city's history.
This sounds like a pretty full itinerary for Detroit.
Oh, yeah. And there was so much more we left on the table. We can't wait to go back.
All right. Without further ado, Rob Bundy reading an excerpt from his travel essay, Redefining Detroit.
At 5:45 a.m. on the morning of my last day in Detroit, I groggily emerge onto the street outside the Westin Book Cadillac Hotel. I love cities in the dawn light before they become populated for the day. Everyone is towing up under the starting blocks. Expectation, potential, what might be possible in a day. As I wait for the light to change, I hear him before I see him. A smiling man walks toward the heart of downtown, singing at the top of his lungs. He's dressed for work somewhere, with an apron, black pants, white shirt, and gleaming black shoes. His arms are pumping as he walks, and occasionally he punches the air to emphasize a line in the song. He's on his way with enthusiasm, and he's got a song sending him there. There goes Detroit, I think, singing on its way to work. Again. Nothing's open this early on a Sunday, nothing except the world-famous American Coney Island. A Detroit institution open 24 hours a day and only one block away. Two guys in paper hats are working the place, a young industrious guy barely out of his teens paired with a white-haired veteran. Both welcome me in and ask me what they can do for me. I look up at the menu on the wall and confess that I'm a first-timer, so I suppose I should opt for the holy article. The older guy laughs and asks me if I want tomatoes, chili, onions, ketchup, and mustard. I ask him if I do, and he says, yeah, I do. So I do. What he presents me with is so iconically American it should be on the money. A hot dog and a white bread bun and a paper cradle with the works. I find a chair and set my breakfast down on a plastic laminate counter to briefly consider this simple thing that everyone in Detroit thinks they personally own. At Rodin, my wife and I had chatted with a local couple over shared small plates, and at one point I had asked the man about the fabled Coney dog. It's just a hot dog, right? I said. I mean, all hyperbole aside, it's just a hot dog. And he had laughed, perhaps a bit self-deprecatingly, and he owned that, yeah, it's probably just a hot dog. But the way he said it, it was as if he was admitting that the Labrador he'd grown up with was just a pet, or that his father or his grandfather was just a guy. What particular thing we choose as a community to identify with at the end of the day doesn't really matter. It could be anything. A hot dog, a well-made watch or bike, the way we like our pizza, a company, or the fond gathering places where we see our friends and drink together. Why, it could even be something as trivial as a square of brightly colored cloth that we hang from our porches on summer holidays. Whatever it is, it's us. It's who we are. It's our neighborhood, our little place on earth. The humble thing becomes the signifier that we use to declare ourselves to the universe. And in the end, it doesn't really matter what we rally around, so long as we rally. And Detroit is rallying and reinventing and reincarnating into something worth visiting again. It's going on right now, right as you listen to this. But as cool as it is, even the locals can't really define it for you. You'll have to do that for yourself. Why don't you?
Rob Bundy reading his travel essay on Detroit. Rob, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Rob Bundy is our Travelers Roundtable contributor. He writes about travel for Third Coast Daily, and you can find his essay on Detroit at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. That's another week's worth of Lake Effects, produced by Dan Harmon, Stephanie Lecce, and Bonnie North, with Amy Kiley and the assistance of Eleanor Peterson, Nathan Royster, and studio engineer John Strelecki. You'll find lots to do this weekend around southeastern Wisconsin. I hope you get to enjoy some of it at least, and also include us in your plans. Lake Effect Weekend airs Saturday and Sunday afternoon at 3 right here on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock. Have a great weekend.